There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from.
My guests today are Mark Washington and Dr. Chris Damon, and they have created something called Supergut. This episode is all things fiber. Please enjoy. Mark Washington and Chris Damon, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thanks for having us, Ethan.
Yeah,
I'm excited to talk to you guys. So my focus for a long time has, and still to this day, it's true, has been weight loss, just purely weight loss. That's the metric I'm concerned with. And I think that you can go about that in many divergent ways. And I don't necessarily think one is better than another for individuals, right? I don't think everybody will experience the same thing doing something. However, I have found, and what I'm really excited to talk to you guys about is, so I achieved weight loss, right? And then the next big battle is maintaining weight loss, which is a whole other battle. So I did that. I have found lately that I got lots of health benefits from weight loss, and I've maintained lots of health benefits from weight loss, but I found that I eat a very not diverse diet. I wind up eating a lot of the same things, and I started to see my LDLs tick up and my HDLs tick down. And this was not something my doctors were super concerned with, but then over a couple of years, they were like, this trend is continuing. And so I've now come into like, weight loss is not the only metric to define my health. Now I have to become one of these people. Like, I've started eating chia seeds. This was not something that I ever, you know what I mean? But I like the majority, I would not eat a lot of fats in my foods. The fat would be in a lean chicken breast or a lean piece of
ground
beef.
Because of the weight loss focus, like that was like avoidance because of weight. Yeah, yeah.
So I was effectively getting no, omega-3s, lots of omega-6s, and there's a whole bunch of different factors there, but I'm interested in health as a metric outside of weight loss, kind of for the first time, and so that's what I'm really excited to talk to you guys about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're excited to talk about that, and obviously, there's lots of different aspects. The area we'll probably spend a lot of time talking about is the gut, right? Right. And the foundation for whole health, which does impact weight loss, but it impacts whole foundational health, which is what you're talking about. So yeah, we're excited to dive in.
Yeah. And the gut is such a weird thing, you know, like I've been reading up about it and like how it can affect depression. It can affect mood. There's some kind of communication happening between the gut and the brain that's like this mysterious thing, and healthy gut versus unhealthy gut. And so there's just a lot to figure out that I don't totally understand. I mean, I don't understand it at all. I'm hoping you guys can explain it to me. What is happening in our guts?
Let me start at the high level, and then Chris can provide you the details to go in as much details as you're so inclined. As I'm, you know, I approach it from a consumer standpoint, and I, you know, thank goodness I have Chris who approaches it from a scientific and medical standpoint. He's literally one of the leading gut health experts out there. So at the highest level, we know now that your gut, literally your digestive system, it has just an outsized role in your overall health and disease prevention as well. Like literally, and it's more than like historically, the thought about gut health, quote unquote, was all about digestion, right? Regularity and bloating and even nausea, things of that nature. And while all that's true, what we know now is that it's so much more profound than that. That's kind of like step one. But it really is, in many ways, your overall health of your body is connected to what's happening in your gut and what's called your gut microbiome. Like literally the trillions of tiny microorganisms, in particular bacteria that reside there, that play this outsized role in your health. And it is tied and connected to just about every physical and even mental system in your body. So appetite control, right? And how your metabolism, how you carry weight. Blood sugar control, the insulin sensitivity, like keeping your blood sugar in a healthy range, your heart health, you know, cholesterol, blood pressure. And then you even pointed to it. We even know now that there's this bidirectional connection between what's happening in your gut and your brain, your mental health. So things like mood and anxiety and brain fog, and even some really chronic disease, depression, anxiety, like those actually have a connection to what's happening in your gut as well. So it's kind of hard to believe. Like when I really dove into this about 4 or 5 years ago, it was a little hard to believe that all of these different systems in your body could have this commonality, this common connection. That's what's happening in your gut. But it absolutely is true. The science has come so far. We still have a lot to learn, but we know not now that your gut is absolutely foundational. If you really, truly want to get a good control of your overall foundational health, you should start in your gut.
Yeah. And is there when I look at this stuff, my very base, like, you know, I'm always jumping to what's the easiest, fastest way, because this was always my inclination with weight loss, get it off as fast as possible, which I know now is like, wasn't the correct route for me, because it just was a failure for 15 years, repeated failures of losing weight and gaining weight. But like my fast twitch, you know, Twitter brain is like, well, just clean me out, like sterilize me and do a fecal transplant of like a person who doesn't have overeating problems, who doesn't have all the bullshit that I have. Just give me their gut. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. And like, is that coming or can we repair this stuff?
Yeah. So, Tom, first of all, I wanted to sort of underscore your really, really important point at the beginning. That weight is kind of a marker and a metric for health, but it's not everything.
Right.
Right. Like, and you know, cholesterol is case in point, but blood pressure, these other things are really, really important too. And they don't always go hand in hand. One of the nice things about the gut, as Mark was highlighting, is if you support the gut with a diverse diet and support diverse microbes, evolution has kind of figured things out for us. And that will in turn support, you know, generally speaking, overall health to a certain degree. So there's some power there in approaching things holistically. Now, in terms of sort of specifics around the gut and what's going on, I think one of the things we've been missing a little bit is we focus so much on the macro micronutrients, and those are the proteins, the fats, the carbs, and, you know, minerals and vitamins. And those are incredibly important. And we've learned so much. We to a certain extent, have addressed food insecurity in certain parts of the world, although not entirely. Where we've learned less and where things are happening right now are in this area of bioactives. And fiber falls into that category. which is the area that we've been really focusing on at the company at Supergut. But there's other bioactives in there as well, in the so-called food matrix, the overall composition of food. And I think as we delve into what some call the dark matter of food, these other things, some of the whole composition of food and how that impacts overall health will become more and more clear.
Right. Yeah. So fiber for me, as I lost weight, as I finally found like a diet, and I don't mean restrictive, but although it was restrictive, mm-hmm. but I mean like my lifestyle that I was like, eating? Oh, I can do that forever. This I'm comfortable with. I had it in my head, like, I know I need fiber. I've read that you need fiber, but I'm not tracking it in the same way at all as my other macros.
Right. Right.
I'm just like, I'm taking vegetables almost as supplements, right? Like my wife eats vitamin pills and I eat a handful of raw broccoli just because I know I'm supposed to eat it. I had never tracked it. And when I started tracking it, the daily recommendation, their daily recommended amounts versus what I was actually consuming was, I was nowhere near it. Yeah. I was at like, 10 grams and they're saying like 30 to 40 grams.
Exactly.
And then I found getting to 30 to 40 grams really tough. So I started taking psyllium husk capsules, which I'm not going to lie, those didn't agree with me totally. You know, I was like bloated and gaining weight while I was taking them and it just wasn't great. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to try to get this all through food. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to eat that much fiber, man, unless you're a vegetarian or something.
You are hitting on such an important point, because what you experience is not just your experience. That is the common experience. And that's when you're trying, right? Right. Like where you started is where the vast majority of us are. Like, yes, we know we're supposed to get more fiber, fruits and veggies. Hopefully I'm doing that when I eat a salad or some broccoli, what have you.
Right.
But it's called the fiber gap, right? And this fiber gap is real and it's pervasive. The stats say literally almost none of us, 5% of adults in the U.S. get that daily minimum recommended amount of fiber in your diet. 5%, that's none of us. Like, and so when you're even trying to, when you're cognizant and even trying to track and measure, you see that fiber gap exists for a reason. It's really, really hard to do. Like through a traditional Western diet to live your life in a sustainable way and way that you're enjoying food, et cetera. It's really hard even when you are cognizant and attempting to do it, right? And so on the other hand, it's really, really important, right? I mean, we know now that fiber is important, not just for digestion, right? But for gut health and for overall health. So what do you do, right? And so that's obviously where hopefully we can play a role in this as Supergut. Like, how do we help people? We make it easier, more accessible, and I say even enjoyable to close that fiber gap in a way that you can do it through food, right? And how can we augment what you get? Whole food diet is still great. It's still the best thing that you can do, right? So continue to eat the broccoli, continue to eat your veggies and your salad. But what can we do to still continue to close that gap? And how can we do it with, prebiotic fiber that fills that gap, whether through shakes or bars? We have our own mixes of standalone as well. And the nice thing is quite different. Like, all fiber is good for you, but different fibers are created differently. And what you experience, psyllium husk is positive for health, but many fibers such as psyllium husk can be challenging in terms from a tolerance and the impact on your digestive tract and how much that you can actually get before your stomach starts to go into knots and you're bloated and so forth. So you have to be careful or cognizant about what type of fiber that you're getting in your diet. We try to focus on those that are more easily tolerated so that you can actually take more of it to fill that gap without your stomach turning into knots and you're standing by the restroom all day long. So yeah, we hope to play a role in filling that fiber gap for folks.
That's great, because I'm still messing with it, because I'm like, now that has become like one of my most important daily metrics. And I find like when I hit it, I'm celebrating and I'm going like, this was too much work. You know, like I found these weird, like low carb tortillas that somehow have a ton of fiber in them. And so I was just like, well, maybe if I just eat these every day, but I don't really want
to every
eat
meal, every
right.
day.
Yeah. And then I don't mind a tablespoon of chia seeds, but like that's a lot of calories. That's, you know, a full serving of chia seeds is a ton of calories. I can't make that trade off. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really work for me. I'll still eat a half a serving a day and get a little dose of, it's a couple grams of fiber. It's not really making a dent in what I need to do. You know what I mean? And I like fruit. So I'll eat a couple servings of fruit. I'm still not naturally getting anywhere near my target. Yeah. To be just completely frank, I just try to be honest on this program, I don't love vegetables. Like mm-hmm. for me, I like a broccoli casserole. I like, or, you know, a scalloped potato that's probably got no fiber in it at all. But like, for me to enjoy vegetables, they've got to be loaded with fat, and I don't want to do that. So I'm now just like, again, taking it as though it's a vitamin or a supplement. And I just come to this every now and again, like, how long am I going to do this? I don't know that I'm going to do this forever. And so therefore, it's not valid.
Right.
Let me tell you just a little bit of a secret. So in regards to that scalloped potato, you've probably heard about resistant starch in different types.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have leftovers, it has more fiber.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Cook it, leave it in the fridge for a day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You can make it the night before and then have it and enjoy it and know that maybe you're feeding the bugs in your gut just a little bit more.
Right.
But I think Mark's point about not all fiber is the same, you know, different types of fiber are doing different things in your diet is a really, really important one. The other important element to think about is not everyone's gut treats specific types of fiber in the same way.
Right.
With modern diets, which are largely devoid of fiber, we truly have lost the metabolic capacity in some people to metabolize these fibers. Now, there are some which tend to be, as Mark said, a little bit kinder on the gut. And there's even a term for this and an approach that's very well validated in the scientific literature around which types of fibers to avoid and maybe which ones to include in our impoverished microbial guts. And this buzzword are the FODMAPs, and maybe you've heard of that, but these are the fibers
that— FODMAPs.
Okay, so these are fibers that are more readily fermented in the upper gut, and they can lead to bloating and even diarrhea in some people. And some hypothesize it's due to imbalances in the upper gut or overgrowth, and maybe you've heard small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. SIBO, yeah, that's connected to this to a certain degree. And some of the fibers that fall in there would be a lot of the fibers that are put into processed foods currently because they're so easy to formulate. These inulin type fibers, FOS or fructooligosaccharide, even like garlic powder and onion powder, which you'd think would be completely innocuous, but some people have a lot of trouble with these because they're high FODMAPs. And folks don't realize in consuming foods that these are the things that may be contributing to a lot of their GI symptoms. So not all fibers are equal, but there are low FODMAP fibers that are much better tolerated by people and actually even help with overall gut health. Psyllium is one of those, the Metamucil that you're talking about, although it's not really all that fun to eat because it gels up. But I mean, that's been studied and it, in some people with IBS, it helps. But there's other fibers too that fall into that low FODMAP category that a lot of people tolerate. And it was with that in mind that we actually designed the fiber blend that goes into the products. It's these low FODMAP fibers, the ones that are better tolerated and ones that have actually been shown to improve your overall GI health.
And so this is something that gets me out of eating vegetables.
I wouldn't go that far. Okay. Eat your veggies if you can. Right? So it mm-hmm. all, because think about it, it all works together. Like it's all in concert. Like even our solution, like we tell people, we think Supergut is absolutely foundational for health as a complement to a healthy, balanced whole food diet, right? And so we still want to get your veggies as much as possible. We know that not everybody loves to have, you know, tons of veggies all day long, right? And so we want to be complementary to it. So we would still very much encourage you to eat that broccoli, right? Yeah. As much as you can. But like, let's not act like you're going to go vegan and just eat broccoli and other veggies all day long. Like, that's not realistic for you. That's not realistic for the vast majority of people. So how could we complement whatever you can get? Those 2 to 3 grams, those add up. How can we complement that by creating other accessible, you know, these well-tolerated types of fiber that are going to really close that fiber gap and improve your gut health? And that's kind of what we're adding to.
So it's possible that I, as a guy who have found a structure or a way of eating that I'm comfortable with, that does include some fiber, albeit not nearly enough.
Yes.
And then go like, well, I'm going to get it to the right number with this stuff.
That's the intent. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's fair. I mean, listen, it's anything at this point, I'm just like really struggling with fiber right now, like trying to get, I have my mind set on 40 grams a day and it's hard.
Okay. It is. So give you an example. Our shakes, they have 20 grams of fiber.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Our bars have 10 grams of fiber in them, and our fiber mix has 8 on its own. Right. I mean, so you can close that fiber gap pretty well if you have a solid base. If you're getting 10, 15, 20, right, through your whole food diet, we can help you close that gap with some of our products. So
right.
Yeah. And I think another thing to point out, when people think about whole foods and fibers, they often go straight to like fruits and veggies. But a diverse plant-based whole food diet includes things like beans and nuts, seeds, and, you know, even grains. And it's some of these fibers that have actually been linked even more strongly with health outcomes than the fruits and the veggies. And, you know, resistant starch, oat beta-glucan, these are things that are found in grains, actually, to a certain degree, in like green bananas and things like that. And ones that have been associated with being prebiotics. And we haven't talked so much about that, but there's really well worked out mechanisms or ways by which these fibers are working. And what's super, super interesting is it taps into the exact same hormones, gut-produced hormones that we're seeing in the media right now in a big way around weight loss. So, you know, the Wegovy's, these GLP-1 based incretin hormone, gut-derived hormone drugs for weight loss that require injection. The reason I think they're so powerful is they're tapping into a really fundamental mechanism that nature has worked out over eons of evolution of how our gut senses what we eat in our diet and regulates our metabolism to handle what's coming through the pipe. And so normally, carbohydrates that are present in tons of different plant foods come packaged part and parcel with these fibers. And the fibers are almost like the natural packaging or instructions that tell our metabolism through our gut, translated through our gut and these hormones, how to process them. And you know, food processing has taken these out. And we're just starting to wake up to, there's a reason that there's whole foods. There's a reason these things are there. And you know, we're recognizing just how powerful they are metabolically. And you know, some companies are sort of leading the charge and trying to get these things back into foods.
Yeah, I didn't make this distinction early on in my life, but I have a daughter with type 1 diabetes. And so we learned, you know, she's now 18. She got it. She was diagnosed at 4. Mm-hmm. And we found, you know, there just is a difference between 14 grams of carbohydrates in a cup of juice and 14 grams of carbohydrates in an orange. It's just, it couldn't be more literally different how it's affecting her body. Juice for the last 14 years has now been considered medicine in our house and not to be touched by anyone but her when she's in a really severe low, right? In a moderate low, we might treat it with something with fats and stuff, right? There's other ways to do it. But if her blood sugar crashes, this is like life-saving essence for her. But for me and for the rest of us, we almost consider juice to be a poison because of the dose, you know, unless you're in the middle of a marathon or doing something like that, I just don't see what use it's having for the body. So that's the interesting thing with which I've known that about fiber and I've had that calculation. I just got super into, for myself, I won't eat sugars like that really, because I'm not using them like that, but yeah. I'm not paying attention to the fiber at all because it didn't seem to have a role in what I was doing. And now today I arrive at a place where I'm like, I think I need some more fiber. Like I need to understand that. And I'm also interested in pro and prebiotics. Mm-hmm. You know, I, as a kid, the only experience I had with them was like, if I had strep throat and did a course of antibiotics afterwards, my mom would dose me up with yogurt and probiotics. And I always just thought of it as like more of a medicine than anything else. So, what role do these have just in life when you're not sick or dealing with something like that?
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. 4 flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Well, let me start really first just explain the difference between the two, because not everyone is as inclined as what you are. And obviously, we're deep into space. And then Chris can talk about the role that they have. So think of probiotics are intended to be live bacteria that you're adding to your system, you're ingesting, whether it's through foods or whether through supplementation pills, what have you, intended to be additional good bugs to add to your gut microbiome, right? I mean, it's back down to the fact that you've got good bugs in your gut and bad bugs. And so probiotics are trying to add more of the good guys in versus prebiotics is kind of what we've been talking about. It's essentially the food for the good bugs in your gut. Oh, okay. And so when you take foods and supplements that are high in prebiotics, and most types of fiber are have a prebiotic effect, it bypasses digestion, like the normal digestion, to make it into your gut where it feeds the good bugs in your gut. So that's the difference between the pre versus the pro. Chris can speak a little bit more about kind of what effect. Both of them have an important role to play. Not all of products that you get off the shelf are necessarily delivering on that, but I'll let Chris speak to the role each plays.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really nice description, Mark. And just quickly going back to the juice comment, you know, sugar is meant to be had with fiber, but fiber is actually meant to be had with your overall food intake too. And I think people don't really think about it. I think as a supplement, I just take it, I'm good. But it's most impactful when you're eating it with other foods. So timing it with meals is important, and it helps mitigate the sugars that are present in those foods. But in terms of this distinction between prebiotics and probiotics, and maybe I'll make it even just a little bit more complicated because there's postbiotics too, which—
Oh boy, I've never even heard of postbiotics.
So so to use Mark's analogy, you have the bugs, which are the probiotics, you have their food, which is the prebiotics, and then you have the postbiotics. That's almost like their, if you could use this analogy, their poo, right? What they're producing out the other end. And turns out their poo is actually really, really healthy to us. Mm-hmm. Those things that they're making, the molecules, are things like butyrate, which is starting to enter the general lexicon. Butyrate is probably one of the star molecules that the microbiome is making to impact our overall health, including, you know, weight and metabolism and these other things. But when I advise folks around, well, what should I do, doc? You know, there are all these probiotics out there. Should I take one? Now there's even prebiotics and postbiotics. Should I take those?
I got to say something because my thought immediately, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking like, so there's the food, the bug's excrement.
Yes.
I understand you want the bugs healthy, so you got to feed it. But it seems slightly counterintuitive to me that you would run the bug's poop through it. Is that, am I wrong? Like, I would think like the bug doesn't want its poop falling on its head. It wants its poop going the other way.
Well, let me tell you something. So one person's poop is another person's food. Right. No, one bug's poop is another bug's food, not person. We're personifying the bugs.
Yes, yes.
So the postbiotics that are being made by some bugs are actually the prebiotics for others. So
it's kind of complex.
Work together.
Yeah. Okay. So they can eat. So if you put those on top, it's going to have a good effect. Okay. So postbiotics. So now you got three categories of stuff we can take.
So freaking complicated. But then again, it's not. And it comes back to just simple things that, you know, Michael Pollan said a long time ago. And I think it was in his book In Defense of Food, and it was eat food, mostly plants, not too much. You know, you can get a lot more nuanced and complicated than that, but that's going to support a healthy gut ecosystem. All those good bugs, we can call them probiotics, and that's going to support all the things that they're making, which are the postbiotics. Now, if folks want to, you know, improve their gut health, let's say that ecosystem is impoverished, let's say it's, you know, turned into more of like a bleached coral reef, there's companies that are working on giving those gut-derived bugs back. A lot of the probiotics aren't those bugs. They're different. Mm. They're ones that come from foods. And foods are probably the better way of getting those probiotics in. And what foods would you eat? You'd eat fermented foods, because the fermented foods are the ones that have those natural bugs. So that's what I always advise my patients when they ask about probiotics, you know, and they just want a sort of general approach, because there are probiotics that have been studied in specific conditions, specific probiotics in specific conditions, and those tend to work, have been studied. But just general health, what should I do? I say eat more fermented foods. And that's things like yogurts, kefir, you know, sauerkrauts, kimchi, things like that.
But and then the other thing that you have to keep in mind, which I was making this mistake a lot too, is if with any of that stuff, you want the refrigerated version, right? Because the stuff that's been pasteurized and sitting on a shelf for 6 months, there's nothing alive in it anymore, right?
So here's the rub. If you put any stock in postbiotics, then even the things that have been fermented that may not have those live bugs anymore can still be really helpful to you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So the jury's out. There's a lot more research that needs to be done around this. And if you want those live bugs, and they do, the live ones do help maybe a little bit more to a certain extent. Yeah, that can be helpful. But I wouldn't discount the value of what those bugs have made, even if the bugs are already dead. And actually, vinegar is a good example of that. Vinegar is a postbiotic. It's otherwise known as acetate or acetic acid.
Okay. And you don't have to get the one with the mother and stuff's floating in it or anything like that?
I'm not convinced that you do. In fact, you know, the research that's been done on vinegar in general supports that it helps lower your blood sugar regardless of what source it is, whether it's apple cider or some other exotic variety.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. But I mean, I like vinegar. I really am a fan of sauerkraut. I like to heat it up. And then every time I heat it up, I'm like, I'm killing all of the benefits here. And I feel guilty, like I'm murdering my food. But, you know, I still heat it up. And so knowing that there's still some benefit makes me feel better about myself. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a word you said that is the postbiotic that people are interested in now. Bactate, is that it?
Oh, butyrate.
Butyrate. Is this a supplement we can just take?
So there are companies that have produced supplements. There's different varieties or way that it's formulated. So tributyrin is one form of butyrate that's actually found in butter. Oh, wow. So, you know, butter isn't categorically bad because it has saturated fat. There's actually some really powerful functional components to it. There's other forms as well. Now, you have to pick your poison because one smells really bad and one tastes really bad. So formulating butyrate as a supplement is really tricky, even in a pill, because the smell is so strong that it can actually come right through the pill. So I think that there might be some promise, to be honest, in butyrate supplementation. But I think the beauty of fiber is that you're supporting your own body's ability to produce butyrate in the right place, in the right time, in the right amounts. Because one of the main products of fiber, after your bacteria has chewed on it and thrown things out the other end, is butyrate. So I'm always for trying to go natural. So you could do the GLP-1 drugs. You could do butyrate, or you could kind of go up the chain of commands to something more natural like a fiber.
And get that's your body exactly where I was going to go. That's exactly where I was going to go. I mean, the human body is just an unbelievable machine. And I think, you know, Chris had mentioned before, like Mother Nature has figured out so much, but we like made it hard for Mother Nature to do her job, right? And so if you get back to the basics, it's all super complex and there's a lot of technical things. But if you get back to some of the fundamentals, like the, you know, eat foods, mostly plants, not too much. And especially if you're getting fiber in, your body is naturally intended to produce the mechanisms that we're talking about here that tap into, that produce these butyrate, that produce these, you know, short chain fatty acids, that produce these gut hormones that you can get an injection. Like literally, if we can like just help Mother Nature do her job, I think that's the best way. And so things like fiber in your diet taps into this exact same science that we were talking about.
No, I completely agree with you. I think the human body is like the most advanced dumb machine, right? And I only say dumb because there seems to be some disconnect between whatever I am when I say I and make a distinction between me and my body, because often what I want is not what my body is doing. And so there does seem to be some disconnect there. Like I want to lose weight and my body's not losing weight and my body's storing fat. And so I have to figure out some complex scheme in order to get my body to do what I want it to do. And yet my body is functioning at this insanely mechanical higher level where it's going like hunger equals starvation equals we got to slow systems down equals this, that, and the other thing equals like, oh, you're lifting weights. This is what you must be doing in order to find food and like whatever the complex mechanisms that my body's working on. And I like the analogy to a car. Like if we were putting more fuel in our car every day than we use, which we all do, who goes to bed on a completely empty fuel tank? You don't do it. You fill it up or it's got a little bit in there. And that little bit of fuel in the car was causing the car to gain weight every day. We would get so good at calculating how much fuel we needed to put in our cars because who'd want to waste money on making the car heavier and slower. We wouldn't do it, right? And likewise with what you're talking about, fiber and fruits and vegetables and getting it through food, if you're putting the wrong oil into your car and your car is not performing right and it's coughing up smoke, we would solve that, right? But for some reason, I just think that a lot of people, and I include myself in this for the majority of my life, you get into a state of low performance and you're no longer even aware that you're performing at a lower level than you could be, right? Like I'm putting stuff into my body so frequently that I'm not even aware of the malaise that I feel, the physical ailments that are present until I get some distance and I'm out of it for a while. And then I eat one of the things that I used to eat and I feel like I'm dying the next day, right? Like it takes some separation. Anyway,
I think that car analogy is absolutely brilliant. I've never thought of things quite like that before. And maybe I can add to that analogy.
Please.
Okay. Let's imagine that our bodies think that they're always on empty.
Right. Yeah.
Even though that tank is full, they think they're empty. And that could be right at the crux of our overweight and metabolic problem, where there are certain things that are missing, and it's not the fuel per se. It might be maybe oil or some of those other little things in there that are really important for how that car overall works. And all the car is sensing is something is missing, something's not right. And the only way it can report that to us is with an empty fuel gauge.
Right.
Hmm.
Right.
You know, there's
so keep putting in more fuel, but actually,
right,
some other things that we need that are setting that fuel.
There's a big argument right now in this area of like, yeah, it's genes, it's genetic versus it's uh-huh, it's dietary, right? It's uh-huh, the landscape of the food. For me, I was raised by a mom who was a health food nut. And it never really stopped me from overeating. So for me, the idea that if we just removed seed oils and MSG from the diet, this would handle all obesity, that's not true. I think you'll still find people that are compelled to overeat. I do it for a variety of reasons. If I'm being completely honest, hunger, actual physical hunger, was a small percentage of why I overate. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of the spectrum, it's like, you know, it takes a million years to actually evolve a gene, right? But then there's studies like the Dutch hunger winter that show like a severe famine can change a gene in a generation. And what if we are in a famine of nutrients, right? This is my idea. Like, what if starting in the 40s or the 30s, they strip the food of so much nutrients that even 100%. Though we're overeating, the body, the gut thinks it's starving and it's going, develop the genes to overeat because you're not getting enough food.
You are so onto
it. No, it's both. So it's actually both in my opinion.
For sure. You're so right. I mean, because the thing that happens here is, it's not just a linear function, right? It actually is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you think about like what we are feeding and what we are not feeding our bodies, the body adapts, right? And so, in great ways, but also in some ways, unfortunate ways, like when you're starving the body of nutrients and when you're overfeeding, you know, the bad fuel, right, into your body, you're actually rewiring your body, your system, to think that that's what you need for survival, for fulfillment, right? And so therefore programming you to want more of the things which are bad for you and program you to not necessarily be expecting these good nutrients that you otherwise should be getting in your diet. And so that's why I talk about sugar as like a drug, right? It's not just the one, it's not just the effect of having that Cinnabon right then, right? It's the fact that you are wiring your body to expect you to be consuming that. And so therefore you are desiring more of that in the future. So it actually becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy over time.
Yeah. I start to think about these guys who just want like regulate seed oils, make sugar be like nicotine or something like this. I think like if you go that route rather than like, let's start increasing the stuff that our body's going to react to in a positive way, you're going to have a bunch of like lunatic addicts running around freaking out because they can't get a fix of sugar. You know what I mean?
Like selling it on the quarter. So yeah, I got the stuff for you.
There's like packets. 100 different points that you just made that are great and that are worth unpacking. You know, the first point is it's not just about taking those bad things out, you know, certain oils, and I actually wouldn't categorically say seed oils in general are terrible, but, you know, maybe certain types of fats that we get too much of.
Yeah.
And others that we're truly not getting enough of. Some carbohydrates, simple ones that we're getting too much of, but other ones like fibers that we're not getting enough of, some micronutrients like salt, sodium that we get too much of, and others that we're not getting enough of like potassium. And I can go on and on. It's ultimately the balance or the ratios of these things that are probably really important. And as much bringing those things that we get too much of, they're not bad. We're just getting too much of it, and bringing up those things we're not getting enough of to achieve that natural balance that food has evolved to be, and yeah, that we've evolved lock and step to eat. So I think that's a super important point that you made. And I just wanted to underscore that. The other point that you made is it's not just about hunger as we experience it. There's a psychological component to it as well. And how stress, anxiety can feed into that. And I don't think we should underplay that. That is so, so important. So I wanted to underscore that. And then the last point that you made, the genetic piece. So can genes really change in the course of a generation? Traditional genetics can't, but there is something called epigenetics.
Right.
Right. Where those genes, they're still there. They're just turned on or off in the course of a generation. That truly does change from generation to generation. Lamarckian evolution, you know, there was Lamarck and there was Darwin. They had this great debate whether if a giraffe stretches its neck throughout its life, whether its progeny are going to have longer necks. And that was all disproven. But now we're coming around and realizing that epigenetics is kind of like a giraffe stretching its neck a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not just survival of the fittest and selection of those that are most fit. So that point also, I think, is a really important one. And they're all sort of like thrown at once, but I wanted to kind of pick each one out because I think they're really, really well put and important.
It just seems to me like all of the arguments about any of this stuff, like weight loss, and even if we get into like being overweight is healthy, right? There's this whole new thing, right? Like all of the arguments are so one or the other. Mm-hmm. And then you have these little echo chambers on the internet where it's like, we're just going to be in this group or we're going to be in this group. And I don't think any of them are going to actually resolve any of these big problems, right? Because they're all kind of looking at just creating factions of belief systems. And for me, it's like, I'm into individuals who want to improve themselves, right? That's all I'm interested in. I don't give a shit how you're improving yourself. If your recognition is that I have gotten better, I've done something, I've overcome something, that's super interesting to me. And so like the thing I've noticed most about myself that I want to overcome is how do I increase fiber in my life and remain sane, right? Like this is my biggest hurdle right now.
Yeah. And I think the sustainability aspect is so key, right? I mean, and you talked about this at the outset. And so many factions and diets and, you know, products are, you know, focused on how do I impact this one metric and how do I do it kind of right away in a way that I could see a sustained change, but not thinking of like the holistic and definitely not thinking about the sustainability of the solution. And that's where like whole health is so about like not just getting an immediate pop and then just going back. It is about how do you create something that you can sustain, that you can live in your lifestyle, that works for your diet, that works for your life, that works for your mental health, right? There's got to be so much more emphasis placed on that. And that's where I think solutions that are more, I call it less about like ultimate restriction and doing one thing, and that are more holistic and balanced, I think are the best path. Because maybe you don't automatically see a dramatic step change in this one metric. But you know what? It's a gradual, continued improvement of your foundation for health over time, and you can sustain that. That is so much more the way, the path to better health and disease prevention than a quick fix, kind of a yo-yo diet that is going to move this one metric, but then a couple months you're back, if not even worse than you were before. That's just not the way.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I think the biggest mistake I made is I wanted to go from, like, I'm not even going to say my pitiful numbers, from whatever my pitiful numbers were, very low, single digits, to 40 grams of fiber a day.
Right.
I tried to do that. And it just has been kind of like, this is too much work, right? Like, I think I need to ease into it more. And if easing into it more is just like actively increasing my fruits and veggies on a kind of slow timeline that is more realistic, right? That's going to be the way it happens naturally. If I get my dose of chia seeds, if I get my couple servings of fruits and veggies, I'm still nowhere near 40 grams at that point, but I'm doing better. And then honestly, if I can take one of your shakes and get there and it's not going to, you know, kill my calories for the day, which I'm still aware of, I'll be very happy.
You're there.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Misgivings with public health messaging, you know, for the last 20 years is, hey, it's been confusing. And, you know, some of the advice have changed back and forth. A solution that seems obvious, eat more whole foods. It's true, but we're not really giving people the tools and how to do that. And that's changing. You know, there's technology that's helping with this, meal delivery systems, and, you know, even personalized approaches to eating whole foods. But I do think that making processed foods better is also a really, really important part of that equation. What is it that we're missing? How can we put those things back in? And I think if we can solve that part of the equation, we're going to be a lot more successful at sustainable change in people, because people will be able to have some of the familiar foods that they've come know to like and that are quite frankly easy and affordable.
I totally agree. This is actually a fascinating area, because I in my life I've seen the cycles of this, and it will go like gluten is the bad one. You just need to beware of gluten. And then I know for a fact that if I make my own sourdough bread, the gluten is not the same as the gluten in store-bought bread, right? Like the bacteria has consumed itself and shit out something that's now not as harmful for me. I know that, right? Michael Pollan. But you go to get gluten bread, and then suddenly they're jacking up the fats in the gluten bread. They're putting sugar into the gluten bread. The gluten bread is no better for you because it doesn't have gluten than glutinous bread. And I think that you're dead on right, but I think that a lot of this stuff becomes marketing, and you're going to find, even in the health food store, you go to the health food store and it's like, well, this doesn't have X, but it's got a lot of Y and Z, right?
Yeah. You know,
like the high fiber tortillas that I was eating, I believe have that shitty version of fiber that it's like, what am I even doing here? I'm just trying to get a number on a graph that is meaningless to my body.
And you know what the food industry is catering to? There's been this sort of polarization and fracturization of different approaches to diets. And you have very entrenched camps and perspectives, you know, everything from carnivore to vegan to, you know, in between keto. And it's all super, super polarized. And I have a word for this. I call them diet tribes.
Yeah.
And diet tribes with their diatribes, right? Like
they're just talking nonsense.
They're just talking. Yeah. It would be wonderful if we could have more of a coordinated approach, and an approach that, you know, is really sympathetic and listens to each of those perspectives, because there's truth that actually fuels those perspectives. Yep. For example, folks that go keto or that even go carnivore, it may be that their gut is so impoverished that having some of the higher fiber foods makes them feel really crummy.
Could be a bit much.
Because they don't have the metabolic capacity for it. And likewise, the folks that, you know, go vegan, there may be differences in their metabolism, in their microbiome, that, you know, having a meat-based diet, apart from all the other arguments for why vegan would be the way to go, makes them feel better. So really listening, you know, one of the first things we learn in medical school is listen to the patient, like listen to the customer or listen to the individual that's sitting there in front of you and really understand them. And I think if we start doing that in these diet tribes, maybe the discourse will be a lot more productive.
I completely agree. I've had this argument a number of times from both sides of these groups because I've lost weight eating a ketogenic diet. I just got to a point where I was eating too much. And so the whole thing that sold me on keto was like, you don't ever have to be concerned with how much you eat. Your body's going to figure it out. And I had to realize like,
small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's not just, I don't eat just for hunger. Like I eat because I'm anxious. I eat because I'm sad. I eat because I'm happy. You know, I'm celebrating with 46 ounces of steak. I'm not going to lose weight if I do that regularly, right? And cover it in butter and all of this. It just didn't work for me. It wasn't a long-term solution. But if somebody is having success, I'm totally with you. I'm like, I have no reason to say that person's wrong. But I do think it becomes religious when somebody experiences something and then assumes that because they experience something, therefore it means everybody else is going to experience it in the same way.
Exactly.
I find that eating a diet of foods that have one ingredient, whatever it is, chicken, broccoli, potato, that for me works best. If somebody else likes, you know, and by the way, it's not an absolute. I'll also throw in some stuff occasionally that has more than one ingredient, right? And it doesn't derail me. But for the most part, the foods that I'm eating have one ingredient, and that works really well for me. I'm not saying that everybody has to do that or that we should regulate society based on some model built on that. That to me sounds stupid. But for people who are experiencing things similar to what I'm experiencing, I just want to say, like, you lose the weight, there's still other stuff that's going to come up. And like, I want to get to a place where I've worked this into my system. You know what I mean?
Right. And so you sustain, right? And so it's not just sustaining the healthier weight, but you sustain better health, right? And so that's the fundamental key in having a more holistic approach and one that is accessible and sustainable for you as an individual. I think that's the key to where it's at.
Yeah, I do too. Guys, thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed talking to you too.
Absolutely. We really enjoyed it as well, Ethan. You are up on your game, man. You're up on your game. We'll get you some super to help out with your 5 for Gap.
Yeah, I can't wait to try it, honestly, because, you know, I'm struggling a little bit, but it isn't something that I'm overwhelmed by, but I'm looking for ways to improve.
It's not easy. So we're here for you.
All right. See you later.
Thanks so much. See you.
And now for the Q&A.
Today's question is from John.
Hi, John.
John says, first off, thanks for being an inspiration. I think what you're doing is awesome, and I love the podcast. He says, my question is about controlling hunger. I am not overweight at the moment, and in fact, probably in the best shape of my life. But I've been overweight in the past, especially as a kid, so I know what it feels like to deal with struggling to lose weight. I can attribute my fitness success to consistency and hard training. However, I am always struggling with trying to curb my appetite. I am often pushing myself when it comes to training, but often struggle with my portions because of this, which I believe keeps me from getting to the next level of fitness. I eat well and healthy almost all the time, but definitely overconsume more than I should. Do you have any suggestions on overcoming this? Perhaps certain foods that are low calorie and very satisfying?
Yeah. I mean, if he says he eats very healthy, so that value is slightly ambiguous, I think, because what does healthy mean? Like, you know, your friend Loren might think dipping everything in camel hump fat is super healthy. And mm-hmm. who knows what John means by healthy. Maybe he means, you know, he's having Diet Coke instead of regular Coke, which I personally do find healthier. But mm-hmm. I still think you should drink water instead of either of those things. So healthy and satiating foods for me, again, not necessarily going to work for everyone, but like veggies and lean protein fill me up quite a bit. I could easily overeat rice or pasta with a fat on them and then be hungry right away. Like if I just eat sushi, I'm hungry very, very soon after that. But if I eat sushi and a bunch of steamed vegetables, I'm not hungry. And if I eat sushi and a plate or even two of sashimi and get all that extra protein, I'm fuller longer. So for me, it's lean proteins, veggies that really I get the most bang for my buck out of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's going to work for John. If he's eating healthy and in pretty good shape, if he wants to take it to the next level, you know, again, that's a tricky one. Like the next level, do you want to get leaner? Do you want to get stronger? You might need to eat more if you want to get stronger. Do you want to be able to run further? Like those would all be in his training, not so much diet. So if he's just looking to get leaner, then, you know, the way that I've found most workable for me is leaner proteins, trying to cut down on fats because I can very easily overeat fats, and being very diligent with when I eat my carbs and how much carbs I'm eating. So I try to get the lion's share of my carbs before and after I work out in the morning. And then the majority of my food is lean meats and vegetables. And I hate vegetables. So I'm literally eating vegetables almost like a neurotic person takes vitamins or something like that. There's nothing that I enjoy about eating vegetables. Vegetables suck. Like, to me, you say like vegetables and whatever my ego or my id or whatever it is, the part of me that just wants to have pleasure is going to tell you like scalloped potatoes are a vegetable, you know, and that truly couldn't be further from that's a fatty starch for me now. It's not a vegetable, you know, yeah. And you say eat some Brussels sprouts. And I'm like, well, can you deep fry them and then candy them somehow and give me big lardons of bacon with them? That's delicious. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, I don't think you're going to have super like peak athlete abilities if you're overeating those. But it'd be very hard to overeat steamed Brussels sprouts. Like you can eat quite a few of those. And, you know, not have a bad caloric impact from them. That's my suggestion. And, you know, lean ground turkey, lean ground beef, bison is a good meat that's got a great protein to fat ratio. Fish, eat lots of fish. You know, I'm not totally sure how John eats right now. But my suggestion would be to jack up the protein a little bit. And then, you know, if you have a problem, fill up your tummy with, you know, I've done long drives where I just bring heads of celery with me and I'll eat the whole head of celery. And, you know, you got an audiobook on and you're driving and it's kind of mindless and you just want to snack on something, and it'd be easy to snack on a bag of potato chips, but there's celery's crunchy and it's doing absolutely nothing for your body calorically, but it's putting stuff in your stomach, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think a celery diet is a good strategy because you're going to be so deficient in protein. So it's not like that, but like, I can sit and munch on cucumbers and not worry about the caloric impact that they're going to have.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that I hope that that's helpful to him. Obviously, there's a little bit of specifics of what he is eating that we're lacking, but everything you said is such good advice and you couldn't go wrong with that regardless, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See how many boneless skinless chicken breasts you can overeat. It's difficult. Cook them without oil. And, you know, even if you salt them, it's still going to be tough to overeat them. And, you know, if you want something a little bit more tender, you could get the, what do they call it? Chicken tenderloins. It's still just chicken breast, but they cut that one tender piece off of it and sell it separately. Cook a shitload of those and good luck overeating. You know what I mean? Like, knock yourself out.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Thank you for that. And thanks for the question. And if anyone else has a question that they would like Ethan to answer here on the podcast, you can email us at AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.